Thank you. All right. Well, good morning. It's approximately 10 a.m. on Thursday, November 17th. This is a Public Service Commission meeting in the hearing room on the 12th floor of the State Capitol in Bismarck. The purpose of this meeting is to conduct a public hearing to receive input regarding demand response and demand flexibility practices. We'll talk about the background here in a minute. I'm excited about this. I'd be more excited if I actually hadn't been gone for the last few days and had actually done a little bit more studying ahead of time, but Victor and I have talked about this a number of times over the course of the years and looked at some of the opportunities that we have already in our tariffs, some of the programs. But it's one of those categories, I think, of low-hanging fruit that we should be taking advantage of as much as we possibly can in using demand response to operate our grid the most efficiently, while also not unduly impacting customers, keeping it voluntary as much as possible, and allowing customers to benefit from demand response and also allowing it to help us shave the peak, both throughout the year and then in times of emergency. Commissioner Crisman, do you have any thoughts that you want to share on the front end of this?
I do, thanks. First of all, are we taking comments from outside of the room interactively?
I believe so, right, just time? Like we did okay. The last hearing. Mm-hmm.
So I agree with most of what you said, maybe just clarifying more than anything, at least the way I look at it. I don't think it's all about just what a particular customer can benefit from and what they want. I think this can potentially go deeper than that, to the point where it affects society and affects others. And this doesn't really have to do with energy, but just an example, because we were just joking about airline service. I mean, if it's more efficient for the airline to leave the plane full of people for 45 minutes just sitting there, I guess that I don't view that as just, well, that's their decision and it's fine if it saves them a couple dollars, good, without taking into consideration the impact on the plane load of people. And here, too, when we get into demand response things, and some of you have heard me talk about my own personal example that I just think clarifies it, at least in my rural North Dakota mind. Our welding shop in Hazen is an excellent business if anybody needs welding done up in that area. And I'm sure that his electric bill is quite high, and it's not a shift kind of thing. It's open in, you know, normal business hours. And I'm sure that a lot of electricity is used on hot summer days when people are out doing agricultural things and needing work done. Now, if he goes on a demand response program, it might help his electric carrier, and it might help him if he shuts down on certain afternoons. But what about the person then that didn't get his equipment fixed, and now it rains and they have a bunch of crop losses because you get a rainy spell and it rains for a week, you know? And so what are the further impacts of that? So I think this needs to be kept in context. Some of this is excellent. Another example, if a farmer can irrigate their land at night instead of the daytime, it's probably almost the same value, maybe better because you don't have as much evaporation. Those kinds of things should be encouraged. I just don't want to see us encourage this to the extent that it starts having adverse impacts on other individuals or customers or groups or on the supply chain or anything like that. And so I think it's like so many things, it can go too far. That's a point that I just wanted to make.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Randy. Sherry, any opening comments?
No, not at this time.
Okay, very good. I also think a key criteria to keep in mind and understand, there is, as we travel nationally and engage in national conversations, there is a huge and growing body of people who are looking to demand response as one of the key tools for maintaining reliability during this transition. And they point to the events like California experienced this summer, I believe it was, when they had a severe shortfall in the supply and needed to curtail demand. And the governor sent out an emergency text message to every citizen in California. How they had that list, I don't know. That raises a whole bunch of other questions, but it's California, so they don't care, apparently. Anyway, so everybody got an urgent text message from the governor basically saying, you know, we need to cut power, or we're going to jeopardize the grid reliability, so cut your power use, and they shed 1,200 megawatts alone. And so I hear advocates of demand response saying, see, look at the people can respond, and sure they can, depending on the signal and depending on the frequency. That worked once, might work two or three times, but if you keep getting those kinds of messages, before long people are like, meh, no, I have to wash my clothes, or no, it's too hot out, I want to keep my air conditioning running, and it ceases to be an effective tool, so I think that we have to keep this all in mind. The realities of human nature. But that said, I think we're a long way from that in North Dakota, and so I'm really excited that we have our utilities here today to share some thoughts with us. Before we get into that, I'll go over some other the formalities. So the commission's holding this hearing due to the November 15th of 2021 Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, which amended the Public Utilities Policy Act of 1978 by providing guidance to promote demand response and demand flexibility practices to reduce electricity consumption during unusually high demand. The commission previously solicited and received written comments through June 15th of 2022, and then we scheduled this public hearing to consider whether the commission should consider establishing rate mechanisms to allow an electric public utility to timely recover the costs of promoting demand response and demand flexibility practices. All comments received at this public hearing will be considered by the Commission together with all other written comments received. Everyone will be given the opportunity to speak. We'd like you to identify yourself for the record, and if you have a prepared statement, a written copy of your statement is appreciated and will be helpful. We also need to send around a sign-in sheet for everyone in the room. It's already done. But if you aren't speaking, I still think everyone who attends should sign the sign-in sheet just so we have that included in the record, and can reach out to folks, too, for follow-up, et cetera. Obviously, if you're interested enough to come, you probably want to hear what happens after this, so we need to know who you are so we can inform you of that. So let's see. Yeah. I'm missing page two of my... Oh, there it is. So, we'll now open the hearing for comments, and anyone who wishes to testify on case number PU 22145 concerning the proposed rules, please come forward and share your thoughts with us.
Good morning, Commissioners. Larry Oswald, Montana Dakota Utilities Company. I'm the Director of Business Development and Energy Services. With me today is also Kathy Bearlocker. She's our Manager of Energy Efficiency and Demand Response. We have Travis Jacobson, our Director of Regulatory Affairs, and Brian Giggy, who is our Supervisor of our System Operations and Planning Group as well. As you know, we did supply comments on behalf of Montana Dakota Utilities back in June, our written comments, where we kind of gave you an overview of the demand response programs that we have in place today for our customers. At this time, we don't have any further comments, but we wanted to be here and available for questions.
Larry, could you walk through your comments just to refresh our memories?
Sure. We have currently have two commercial or two demand response programs for our commercial and industrial customers. We have our demand response interruptible rate 38, which is a tariff where customers over 500 kW, so it's the larger loads, are able to, if they want to curtail their loads, typically most of those customers have a backup generator, and they will curtail the entire building load, and that's what's required to be on that rate 38. I believe we have five or six customers currently on that rate, total of about 17.6 megawatts of demand response from those customers. And then our second program that is also for commercial and industrial customers, but this goes down to commercial customers that have 25 kW or higher. So they have to have 25 kW of curtailable load to participate in the program. And this, we operate through a third party, C-Power. So the C-Power contracts with the customers. Their team puts together the customer's curtailment plan. So it's whatever types of discretionary equipment that they feel they can shed when we call on this event. Currently in that program, we have, I think, in the neighborhood of 30 customers, 27 to 30 customers, I believe this is, on our integrated system, which includes North Dakota, Montana, and South Dakota. And we have 27.6 megawatts in that program as well. Our goal is to grow that to 40 megawatts in that program, as well as I believe in our IRP we've identified that we want to grow our rate 38 out into that 20 megawatts range. So in total, we have approximately 45 megawatts of demand response between those two programs. That was probably the bulk of our programs. You know, we do have time of day rates for our customers, both residential and commercial. I don't think we discussed those in our previous comments, but we do have those rates, and those rates have been in place for many years as well. So we do have customers participating in those rates as well, where they're in the time of use rates, if they shift their usage more to the off-peak time periods versus the peak, they'll see significant savings on their mm-hmm. electricity bill.
So on your demand response programs, is there, do you receive capacity credits for those? How much do they count?
We do.
From ISO, I mean.
And Brian, correct me if I'm wrong, we treat this as part of our resource adequacy.
Mm-hmm.
So that 45 megawatts is generation that we don't have to build or purchase. It just subtracts from our overall total load.
So you can count that 100% for your reserve margin?
Yeah, we get about 8% our total capacity.
Okay, but those 45 megawatts, do you get 100% credit?
Okay. In the last planning year, 45 megawatts.
And maybe just repeat that for the record.
Yes. In our last capacity planning year, it was 41 megawatts that we got credit for.
Well, it's good.
So.
How often have you called on those?
We've been, I don't remember exactly. I believe we started this program in somewhere between 2010, 2012 time period. So we've probably been doing the demand response programs for the DRR program, the larger program, for approximately 10 years already. We've had one event in the history, and we do test every year, winter and summer, to make sure that we have the seasonal capacity in both the winter and the summer. We had one event in 2019. It was actually when we had that polar vortex that was going on, where MISO was pretty much cold across the entire MISO footprint. And I believe MISO was forecasting somewhere in the neighborhood of being in that 500 megawatts short. And we did call on the resource, and the interesting thing was is that we actually had our winter test scheduled for that day, which was kind of interesting. So we had a little challenges, you know, making sure, no, this is really an event, not a test with customers. But our customers did perform well. They achieved what we intended with the program, and we met what we had expected in the program for that event. And it was on that cold January day. I don't remember the exact date, but it was minus 40, I think.
And then is there in the tariff a limit to how long they can be curtailed?
Yes, as part of that program, it's 4-hour blocks.
Okay.
And up to 50 hours per year for that program. In our rate 38, it's actually 100 hours per year, and there's no set hours. So they could be off for 8, 10, 12, 24 at a crack, but it is limited to 100 hours.
And the 4-hour blocks per 24 hours, or?
Yes.
So the next day they could, you could
next day you could take them for another 4 hours if you needed to, yes.
Do you get, Randy?
That's, the 4-hour blocks and 50 hours per year, which one is that now?
That's the DRR, what we call our Demand Response Resources Program, DRR program.
I think that's the first one.
Okay. And then the are you sure I thought?
What was that?
I thought you'd phrased it the other way before. I thought the DRR program was the second one you mentioned. That was.
It is the second one. Yep. The DRR program is the second program I mentioned. The first one was the rate 38.
Okay.
That's so which one has the 4 hours and 50, 4 hours and 50 hour max?
The DRR program. I apologize for the confusion.
Okay. And so what's the rate 38 amounts?
That is 100 hours per year, and there's no specified hours for an event.
Okay.
So they could be off for 4 days?
Could be. I mean, we haven't had an event where we needed that, but, I mean, technically it could be that long. But as I said, on the rate 38, most of those customers, part of the requirement is they need to take their whole load. So it's their entire building or entire operation. And I believe all but one have a backup generator.
So the back,
go ahead.
The backup generator is not a requirement. That's just something you would assume.
Yeah, it's
they
not
would
a requirement. Nope. It's just a lot of customers that also have the generator, and you know may want to participate in that program. It does provide them a cost savings, and they're willing to run that generator and the associated fuel costs that they'd have during those events. So.
Do you feel like you've maximized participation from potential good customers in both of these programs?
I feel we've been done very well. We're continuing to look for opportunities both to grow the rate 38. As I said, I believe in our last IRP, we were looking to grow that out to 20 megawatts total program, and we have a total program goal of 40 megawatts in the DRR. Program as well. So, and our partner C-Power with the DRR program, you know, continues to market that. Our reps also continue to market that to our customers, and we're hoping we can grow to that 40 megawatt potential.
How many customers in that large powered, how many customers might qualify for your rate 38?
I'm not sure. It's definitely limited because you got to be over that 500 kW. So that's going to be your larger, more industrial, mm-hmm. larger commercial, large square footage types of buildings or operations. So I don't know the exact number. Like I said, I think that's the 17.6 megawatts we have today comes from about 5 or 6 customers.
Right. Could you file that after the fact? How many potential customers in that category?
Sure.
And what percent of that customer is captured in this rate?
Potential for the over 500 kW customers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Do you know, my apologies if this might be something for maybe like a Darcy in your company or maybe Travis, but with the winter, with the seasonal construct at MISO, mm-hmm. there's pretty significant reserve margins anticipated and being required for the companies. Are you looking at this as one of the ways to meet those winter, pretty high winter reserve margins and a way of growing this?
You know, our demand response already does provide us that benefit both in the summer and the winter season. Specifically, our demand response resources, or the DRR program, we do have a seasonal construct to that. And currently, because we only were planning on the summer reserve margin, we pay more per kW that the customer can shed in the 4 months of our summer season, or, you know, May through September, June through September, than we pay in the winter. Now, with the seasonal construct at MISO, we may need to reconsider how we or change the program to say maybe we need to balance that between the winter and the summer season, or maybe we need to more incentivize customers in the winter than the summer, mm-hmm. depending on what our needs are. But we already do have that in our program, the seasonal construct, as well as we test both summer and winter. That is a requirement of the program, that the customer has to show us that they can perform when we call on it.
Okay.
Yeah, you mentioned your time and use rates for customers. Can you elaborate on that a little bit more, on how many customers you have participating in that, and what you do for educational opportunities to invite customers to join that and be a part of?
Yeah, we currently have 4 time of use rates, 2 residential. One is our rate 13, which is thermal storage rate. And we also have rate 16, residential time of use rate. The thermal storage rate, we have 4 customers participating in, and we have 4 customers in our time of use residential rate. So only 4 customers. But in our, we also then have a time of use rate for our small commercial and large commercial customers. In our small commercial, which is rate 26, we have 291. And I believe this was as of October of this year. And then in our large commercial, rate 31, we have 48 customers on the time of day rates. So,
how many in that one?
48 in rate 31, which is our large.
Those opportunities weren't mentioned in these comments, were they?
No. We did not include our time of use rates in our comments, correct.
Is that because those aren't really something that you would trigger? This is limited to the periods of unusually high demand.
Yeah.
And that's more of a peak shaving.
Yeah, more of a shaving, correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, it's really relevant to the overall demand response, but this is... this particular doc, it was more focused on the emergency times. But I think we should gather information from just the more general demand response, too. So I'm glad you had that at hand. So can you talk some about the air conditioning recycling? Not recycling, cycling program.
Yes.
This is something you've had in your IRP for a while, but have yet to pull the trigger on, is that correct?
Correct. We have looked at an air conditioning cycling program for our residential and small type commercial customers. We've modeled that in our IRP for several years. We did look to implement that at one point, however, and it is showing as cost effective, you know, through our cost-benefit analysis. However, our commercial demand response programs were a little bit more cost-effective than the residential programs. So we focused on our commercial programs first, but we are still potentially considering that as a program. So that program, essentially, as we designed it and what we've modeled, would be using Wi-Fi programmable thermostats for customers, which will also provides additional energy efficiency benefits on top of the demand response benefit, and that we would be able to cycle customers' air conditioners during times of peak demand. And whether that would be a direct cycle, one way to get that resource is to cycle the air conditioner. Maybe it can only run, you know, for a shorter period of time, or you could do what they call a temperature, you know, setup. So maybe the customer normally is at 74 degrees in their home for cooling, and we would bump it up to maybe 76 or 78, or 2 to 4 degrees during that period, and that would, so the air conditioner essentially wouldn't run to ride it through that peak hour or two that we need the resource. So, but that is still a program that we're considering and modeling, you know, as part of our integrated resource planning.
So if it is cost effective, why haven't you done it? Why don't you just do it? What's the stop? What's stopping you?
It would be something that we would bring to the commission here for approval to recover the costs of those programs through the cost benefit analysis, and it's something that we have not brought to the commission to date.
Mm-hmm. Well, I personally think you should. So,
nope. One of the things to note is we are currently doing an energy efficiency potential study. We have hired a third-party contractor, GDS Associates, and they're currently performing this energy efficiency potential study for us, which will help us identify all the energy efficiency programs designed that we can offer our customers, both residential and commercial, as well as demand response programs to help us put together that portfolio. We expect that study to be done in April of 2023, and we expect to include the results of that study in our integrated resource plan. And, you know, depending on how that study turns out and the portfolio of programs, we look to potentially bring a portfolio of programs to the commission after that.
So that's, though, like 3 to 5 years, it sounds like to me, by the time we get through all of that. Like, is there anything we're doing that's slowing this down? Anything that you need from us to help you kind of move forward on some of these energy efficiency proposals that, I don't know if it takes more staff or if it's, you know, what the downsides are that I'm not seeing that require you to wait, put in the integrated resource plan. That's a big, long process getting through all that. And then, you know, meanwhile, it's 3 years later and there could have been benefits of these programs, you know, occurring all that time. Unless I'm missing something or there's something you need from us that's holding you back from doing that.
I don't know if there's necessarily anything that was holding us back from putting that together. One of the things that we needed to kind of identify is what is our potential out there? And that's why we wanted to get this study going. And I don't think we're looking at 3 to 5 years until we get some we bring some programs forward. Like I said, the study will be done here in April, and, you know, putting a filing and everything together could happen after that. So I think it's something that definitely could happen in the next 12 months or so. But really, the study will help us understand what is the potential, what programs should we be going after, what will help us fit our system, what is the most cost beneficial for our customers. Mm-hmm. So having that study and be able to support the assumptions and what we're making will help us develop a good portfolio of energy efficiency and additional demand response programs for our customers.
Okay. So to the extent that MDU is reevaluating its capacity plans for meeting the seasonal construct with MISO, that in a time frame that's different than your normal planning cycles, I don't know how urgent that review is, but it's changing dramatically fairly quickly. So I would really like to see you guys pursue the DR and the energy efficiency as much as possible as part of that. So when you bring forward to us, here's how we're going to meet that. I want to make sure that we're taking full advantage of the existing system, demand response programs, energy efficiency programs, to address that capacity need without, you know, so we're minimizing any potential resource procurements if you need them. I don't know. Maybe you have access already, but I think we need to be very, I want to be clear now that this needs to be part of that if it isn't already as a part of your plan for meeting those seasonal construct requirements.
Yes.
So I'm sure you've visited or are aware of how other companies around the country do those kinds of programs. You kind of referenced it very generally. You get to a certain peak demand time, and maybe you are able to adjust their thermostat up, assuming it's a summer peak, to raise their air conditioning level a couple of degrees so it's not on so much. When in other instances where companies already have a program like that, are they very specific when people sign up so they know what a peak demand time is? And are there usually limits of how often that's allowed to occur? And are there limits on how far you're able to adjust that thermostat? Because this is one of those things where I get worried about phrases like as much as possible as opposed to what's reasonable. You know, a couple of times a summer, taking somebody's thermostat from 72 to 74 sounds pretty innocent and potentially very helpful. Then years down the road, when, because these events are becoming more and more frequent, when it's half the summer and you're just plain essentially shutting air conditioners off because you're taking them to 90 instead of 74, and all of a sudden it doesn't look so good anymore. So I'm wondering what kind of level of detail is in these agreements that people are signing up for.
Usually all those parameters are laid out in the specific program for any utility. A lot of them, you know, say it's only going to be for a 2 to 4 hour time period, similar to what we do on the DRR program. 4 hours at a crack. You know, it all depends on the program design. Usually there's a limit to the number of events that they can have per season. And a lot of programs also provide an opt-out provision so that customers may be able to opt out of an event. Now, it's not that they can opt out of every event. It might say you get one opt-out per season or two or whatever it is. They always put that in their program to help provide flexibility for customers to make sure they stay in the program so that, let's say, the day we have an event and they've got 25 people to come to their house for a birthday party or something like that, they could say, no, I don't want to participate today because I have something going on. So there's a lot of things that can be constructed within these programs to improve the customer satisfaction, make sure they stay in the program, and help us provide that resource as well.
So one of the, well, actually the main item we're supposed to be considering today is, should the commission consider establishing rate mechanisms to allow you to timely recover the cost of promoting demand response and demand flexibility practices? So what are your thoughts on that? Well, how do you promote them now, and how would you view this as being an expansion of that or different from what you're already doing?
We're promoting our demand response program, trying to grow those programs. We believe demand response and, you know, and energy efficiency can be key tools for utilities to help them shape their loads, meet peak requirement demands. But I think, you know, each utility is somewhat different. Their load shapes are different. Their customer base is different. And I think each utility can determine that and bring forward the programs, you know, to this commission for approval and to approve the associated cost recovery. But we do feel there are good programs, and we're offering, you know, programs today, and I expect in the future we'll probably look to expand those programs.
And you're timely recovering the cost of promoting these programs already?
Correct.
Okay. Victor or Jack, do you have thoughts on that specific thing or anything else?
No.
We already do allow them to recover costs of promoting.
Right. To the extent that there's advertising related to it, we've generally allowed that in prior rate cases and similar types of proceedings. To the extent that there's new programs, you know, we generally have reviewed those on either a one-off basis or on occasion they're part of a bigger rate case package. And we kind of just review the merits of those because, you know, all of those have a cost associated with them. I mean, it's utilizing the things that are out there, but there's still a cost to procure some new type of metering or the smart meter or the, I'm sorry, the smart thermostat types of things. There is a cost, so we always try to take that into account when considering one of those proposals.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any more questions?
No.
Do you have any?
No.
Your study that you're doing,
mm-hmm.
will we get a copy of that when it's done, or when will we see that?
We intend to include that in our IRP, I believe, right, Travis? Yeah.
And when do you plan to have the IRP completed?
July 24th.
See, I told you it was going to be 3 to 5 years, Larry. It's 22 right now.
Well, it's of 23, right? July 24th of 23.
No, 24.
Oh, of 24, yes. Yes. But we have our results already next year, and we'll be working towards, you know, the study results and programs next year. So,
all right.
And if we bring forth a portfolio of programs, I would expect we would file that potential study as part of that to support for that, for those programs.
All right. Well, I'll talk with staff, but how we might speed this up a little bit. That program will look at existing and potential new, or that study will look at existing and potential new opportunities,
yes.
Correct? Okay. And where is this company based? Are they familiar with what other states do, and they're like a national firm?
Yes. Yep.
The name was what?
GDS Associates.
GDS. Okay.
Where are they out of?
I'm not sure, Kathy, do you recall? They're headquartered near Atlanta, Georgia.
Thank you. Okay. All right. I don't have any more questions for you, staff. Victor, Jack, any questions?
I have no additional questions.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Larry. Are any of the other experts from MDU going to chime in? Or did Larry cover it for you? He did. Okay. I'm assuming we have some folks online.
Yes. I see four in the GoToMeeting.
Okay.
Free
do you
to
know,
speak as they want.
Victor, did Ottertail and Excel plan to participate online?
So it sounded to me as though
there's
Excel did plan to make some comments, and I see Ottertail face up there. I know they had asked me for the link.
Oh, and
so,
there's Alex. See them
hopefully
both.
Both of them have some things to say for us.
All right, since Ottertail popped up first, we'll call on you, Jason. And then, Alex, you're on deck.
Thank you. Good morning, Commission. My name is Jason Grenier. I'm the manager of market planning here at Ottertail Power Company. I didn't prepare any comments that are in addition to the comments that we filed on June 15th. I am available for any questions to talk about our demand response programs. I do manage that area, and so hopefully I'm able to answer any of the questions that the commission has today. And I can summarize my comments if you'd like that.
Yeah, if you could walk through your comments, that would be great.
Sure. So some of the highlights of our comments, you know, Ottertail is a winter peaking utility. We can control about 10 to 15% of our load in the wintertime, less in the summertime, of course. We don't have as many of those loads there. We control through a couple of different strategies. One is for we can control for capacity. If MISO were to call for a capacity event, we could do that. But mainly we control for economic reasons, and that is we see fuel prices high, so we'll control to mitigate those high fuel prices, and then we directly pass those costs on to directly pass those savings on to our customers, of course. And then we have multiple programs that would fit kind of under that demand response or DR umbrella as far as we have many direct load control programs, and you can see that in our comments where we have six direct load control programs and about almost nearly 18,000 of our customers, which is over one-third of our customers participating in those. Those are both commercial and residential customers, so very robust program there. And then we also offer time-varying rates, which is time of day or time of use rates. And we have about 400 customers participating on those rates as well. you know, direct load control, it's one-way communication. As of some of my peers at Otter Tail have probably talked to you in the past about some of the advanced grid investments that we're doing and that this commission's approved. They talked about advancing our load management system to, you know, updating that to a new system where we can probably get further participation, hopefully. Going back to one of your questions that you had for MDU, I would say that we've probably maxed out actually where we're at on demand response in North Dakota. We're trying to maintain what we have right now. And other than very large customers, when we add those, we're able to do some you know, there's some large opportunities there. But as far as the traditional, you know, commercial residential stuff, we're probably at its max under the existing technology. But because we're going to be able to do some advanced things, you know, investments with the grid and metering, we're probably going to be able to do some more advanced things in the future with and grow that load management. As far as, you know, connecting to smart devices in the home, you know, offering opt-in or opt-out type of services instead of just a direct load control and things like that. So we're excited about the future, and we appreciate the commission supporting some of these initiatives as we go.
Have you done any estimates, Jason, on how much with the new smart meters that you're going to be installing, how much more you might gain? You've got 10 to 15%.
Chair Fedorchuk, we have not done that analysis at all. And I can say we don't have that teed up as something that we're going to do in the next, anytime in the near term. Those advanced meters is going to take several years to get out there, but we're excited to start doing some pilots and just see what kind of interest we have in doing those.
Okay. So you feel like you've maximized with existing technology. What is Minnesota? What is the Minnesota Commission pushing you to do? Do you have any pilots with them that are outside of kind of the bounds of what we've embraced in the past? Anything more kind of pushing the envelope that the Minnesota Commission's having you guys do?
Yeah, Chair Fedorchuk, I would say not really at this point in time are they pushing us to do anything more. Obviously, on the electrification of transportation, that's a big one where we have to, we basically have to make sure we're encouraging those customers that have EVs to go on these rates. So that's a big one, and we would definitely do that in North Dakota as well, of course, to put those new loads, that home charging on those off-peak rates. But they're not asking us to do anything else. We do have a pilot time at residential time of day pilot that has not started yet. We're waiting for that metering to get out there. We have the same thing that you proved actually in our last North Dakota rate case, which is a time of day residential pilot. We have not kicked that off at this time either. We're just waiting for that advanced metering so we can kick those pilots off. But that's probably the only pilot that we have in front of both commissions at this time.
Andy, do you have any questions for Octel?
Yeah, in your written comments, you had table one, which showed the megawatt hours and the financial savings on the demand load control side of it. I didn't see a similar thing for the time varying rates. You have the meter count, but not the amount of savings. Could you file that with us, or do you know about what that is at the moment?
Commissioner Christman, that's something I don't believe we'd be able to compute. So the time varying rates is basically you're giving a price signal to change the customer's behavior. And so we don't necessarily know. I'm just trying to think about this a little bit. We don't necessarily know what they would have or may have not have done when we sent those price signals, because some customers, they might just buy right through and they don't care in certain, you know, situations because they don't want to change their operations or things like that. So that is just harder to, it's extremely difficult to track those behavioral changes and what could have happened if they maybe would have done something different or, you know, if they just bought through. But we know on the direct load control stuff, we know how much load was there. We hit the switch. How much did we get back? What were the prices during that period? And we can calculate actually what those fuel savings are. I would say it's extremely difficult to do on the time varying rates. But I would say, you know, if those customers decide to keep their operations going during a peak period, I mean, they're paying that those costs. So they're not getting subsidized at all. They are paying those costs, those higher costs.
Okay. And so then on the demand load control, why do you think your participation is so high compared to a lot of other utilities?
Commissioner Crispin, you're asking why it's so high?
Yes. Do you think you have just a superior advertising shtick? Or?
I appreciate the question. I really do. And you know, the team here at Otter Tail that's been doing it for many, many years has a lot to do with it. But several different things. I mean, we've been doing it for a very long time. We've been doing it, you know, almost since the beginning of time, really, and trying to figure out ways that we can operate our system more efficiently and that we can save our customers money. That's what it's all about. And that's my job, my team's job every single day. I honestly believe that we have a great relationship with our customers. They trust us when we advise them on different technologies and ways of saving money at their home. You know, traditionally, and I think still the case, electric heating and cooling is definitely off-peak electric heating cooling is about the cheapest option out there. And so we've been able to promote those technologies, come up with innovative technologies over the years. And we've just, you know, been able to have a real deep penetration with our customers and lots of wins. And so, yeah, I'm very proud of our robust DR portfolio.
So is there any chance that you're making the offerings too good, and that is why you have such high sign-up compared to apparently most other utilities, that you're just offering them a deal that exceeds the value of what's being given them, and that perhaps your overall rates wouldn't need to be where they're at. They could be lower if you weren't giving too much of a sweetheart deal on this. I don't know that that's the case. I just ask if that's a concern when your sign-ups seem to be so much higher than other utilities.
Commissioner Crispin, I would say our sign-ups have definitely come down in the last several years. I mean, they've diminished a lot. We're trying to maintain those levels right now. I would say, you know, if you go back 10-plus years ago, I mean, that was more of a time where we had probably, you know, some of the best participation ever, and right now we're trying to maintain. We do look at each program annually as far as cost effectiveness and making sure that those programs overall are providing, you know, benefits to all customers, you know, to the utility test. So we're hoping to see that the participant's going to save money, but also there's going to be benefits to the utility. And so when you go back and you look at that table one there, and you see, you know, overall that $5+ million. I mean, that's fuel savings that all customers are enjoying. It's not just these customers, but all customers are getting, you know, that $5 million less in fuel to purchase. And so I, you know, I argue, because these are the customers I represent. And so sometimes I will argue maybe with our pricing area, because I want larger discounts for these customers, because, you know, as we go forward, and you said it, talking with MDU, that we're seeing more fluctuations in pricing out there, and we're seeing maybe more of a need for demand response and reacting to prices from MISO or capacity issues out there. And so keeping these customers on these rates, even if you're not controlling them, is so valuable for just, you know, grid stability and making sure that that we have a robust, reliable grid going forward.
Thank you, Jason.
Is it even, this may be a question for staff, but is it even possible for them to offer a sweetheart deal? Don't we evaluate the cost benefit of these programs and make sure that they're paying off?
Yes, we do.
Okay. So that's not possible. We would say you can't do this anymore if they offered a sweetheart deal.
Right. That would be part of our evaluation.
Yeah. Okay. So on the air condition control, air conditioning control rider. You have 488 customers. Is that a residential program?
Or? Chair Fedorchik, we offer that to both residential and commercial in North Dakota.
So when you say you've maxed out, why do you say that? I mean, you have more than 488 meters with air conditioning.
Chair Fedorchik, let me take back those comments. I would say on the winter side, we have maxed out. We're still trying to grow that in the summer season. It's challenging. People like to, they worry about not being cool and maintaining their comfort. And so we still believe there is opportunity on the summer side. And as you talked about previously with, MISO's having some changes as far as a seasonal construct. And so we have been focused quite a bit on the summer season for the last several years. Now we see probably more opportunities when we think about the other seasons. But yes, there is more greater opportunity in the summer season to get more customers on our Cool Savings program.
All right. And I'll make the same pitch to you that I made to MDU, but as you look at meeting those seasonal PRAs, be eager to see how you're maximizing demand response in meeting those requirements.
Yeah, and Chair Fedorchik, I mean, one thing that we've been thinking about a lot is as we see a lot of customers electrify their heating systems, and really there's been a focus the last few years on heat pumps, full climate heat pumps that operate in some of these tougher conditions where we live. We're seeing that's probably going to be a lot of opportunity actually in those shoulder months, the fall and the spring, to do more DR with those because they can be operating during those times where, the temperature is still above zero. And so we think that there's going to be a lot of opportunities in that area as well.
Excellent. And then if you happen to be so efficient that you have extra capacity, there's probably going to be a need for that and you can make some money selling it. So all the more reason to be making sure we're maximizing these kind of resources. Terry, do you have any other questions?
No, you clarified what you meant by maxed out on the response demand. I just have one. We approved your advanced metering infrastructure. When will that be implemented?
Thank you for the question, Commissioner. I know that they're trying to get tests or pilot meters out there right now, and so I think there's about 1,000 of those they're trying to get out in the field right now. I think it won't be completed for a couple more years, though. But that doesn't mean that we can't start doing some other pilots at the same time. So once we get, enough meters out there where we can start running some of our like residential demand, residential time of day pilot and other things, we definitely want to get going on those. So I don't see that as slowing us down too much.
Okay. So what metrics are you going to apply to that to evaluate your demand response?
You're talking about just overall when we have advanced metering and just evaluating demand response programs?
Yeah, the benefits of it. How are you going to quantify that?
Yeah, so the benefits, we'll be looking at a customer's load prior to an event, and then after event, I'm looking at the economics behind that as far as how much fuel did we save and what were the prices at that time. I'm looking at that drop in capacity and what is the value of capacity as far as now we're not having to build for that. And we can see those avoided costs very easily. But in addition to the financials and just managing the load, I would say one thing that we're very concerned about and interested in is just the customer experience and making sure that we're having good adoption rates. We're getting feedback from customers. We're consistently reevaluating our programs and tweaking them to fit our customers' lives. I would say just anecdotally that customers nowadays probably have less tolerance for load control than they did 20 years ago and maybe not as interested in some inconveniences in their life to save, a couple dollars here and there. And so what we really have to focus on is circling back with the customer, getting that feedback, making sure we're not doing too many hours of load control. We're right-sizing it, and maybe it's more customization for each customer or as far as we talked about opt-ins and opt-outs on previously.
Okay.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah, it did. You know, just going back to a comment that you made that earlier, that it's hard to quantify that because you don't know what they gave up. So, I mean, when you roll out these smart meters and you're trying to do an educational program and attract people to get into them, you're going to rely on a lot of customer feedback and honesty.
Yeah, Commissioner, what's very challenging is the evaluation on the time of day to look at the economics on the time of day or time of use rates. That's a little bit more challenging. For the customers that where we're doing direct load control, or I think where they're opting in and out of some of these programs, I think it'll be a little bit easier for us to do that evaluation. I know it will be. But the time of day or time of use rates is a little more challenging to see just how much they're responding. I think when we do get more sophisticated metering, as we're planning on getting here, it'll make that that much easier to evaluate on the time of day or time of use ones, because the metering that we'll have will be the interval will be at a much smaller level, and we'll have it at our fingertips, more often too.
Thank you, Jason.
Jason, you mentioned that customers are getting a little bit more hesitant maybe to give up some of their control or some of their comfort. And as excited as I am about demand response as an opportunity, because I feel like we haven't, in all of our utilities, maximized its potential, there is the flip side of the coin is more and more things are connected to electricity and we become more and more dependent on it. Customers will be less willing to give it up and less able to give it up, quite honestly. So as we move to electrification, even just electrification of vehicles, even in the north here, it'll be harder for people at night to do demand response if they're charging their vehicles. It'll, so we all probably need to keep that in mind, too, that we don't go down this path of relying on it so much, and then all of a sudden, oops, it goes away.
So, yeah, Commissioner Fedorchuk, if I can just respond quickly. And that's why I think the advanced metering project is so important, to just give the utilities those optics. And, I see a time where the night isn't the off-peak anymore. That is, you just don't know when the off-peak is. But us having the optics and seeing the pricing from MISO, there could be, little 15, 30-minute windows of off-peak throughout the day. And so it's important for us to be able to send those price signals to the customers in the future or do some kind of load control. If it is just even a small window, I see that, someday that's probably the future.
Interesting. Randy or Sherry, any more questions?
I don't.
My final question, Jason, would be, and if you don't have it, maybe you can just get it to me, what kind of capacity credit you're getting from MISO for your demand response programs?
Yeah, and so, Chair Fedorchuk, that's similar to MDU, where it just reduces our reserve requirements there. I believe it's 100 in the winter and around 15 to 20 in the summer. Wow. So basically, we'd be looking at the summer at 15 to 20 megawatts. But if you want a firm number, I can definitely get that to you.
Sure.
But it basically reduces our obligation.
Yep. All right. 115 summer or winter summer. If it's a lot different than that, you can file something.
Okay. Yeah, I know that when we've done testing in the past, we've hit up to 120, but I think 100 is our conservative number that we generally use for winter, and I think we've hit it as high as 19-something or 20 in the summer, but I think we use 15. I will definitely double check that for you. It's different.
Okay, thank you so much. All right, do you guys have any more questions? No? All right. Thank you, Jason. Appreciate you being here today. All right, Alex. Back. home and ready to speak. Oh, hold on a second. We got to make sure we can't hear you, but you're not muted. So, Matt, any suggestions?
Alex, you want to check your microphone settings?
Switch to a different microphone.
We can hear you now.
Perfect.
I just wanted to make sure.
Thank you. I wouldn't be doing something remotely without some technical issues. So, thank you very much for having us here this morning. It was great to see Chair Fedorchak and Commissioner Hogan Hofert at the annual NARU conference, and this was an item that came up on numerous occasions, whether it's talking about overall reliability issues or I saw Commissioner Hogan Hofert at the one specifically about demand response. That was very interesting. I learned a lot, and we're very excited to be here this morning to talk about some of the programs that we offer and to get your input and answer any questions. I'm a regulatory policy specialist for North Dakota. And with me today, I have Sean White, who's the director for DSM and Renewable Ops with Xcel Energy. And we also have Ryan Brewers, who is the manager of business solution and results with Xcel Energy. We filed written comments on June 15th, 2022, in response to the commission's order dated March 30th, 2022, which was requesting comments on demand response rate mechanisms pursuant to the IIJA. I'll be providing brief opening remarks, and similar to what I did on the electrification of transportation, I'll be turning it over to Sean and Ryan once these opening remarks are done. But if you have any questions during what I'm saying, feel free to jump in. In your order, you noted that it would be in the public interest to review past actions taken regarding demand response and demand flexibility, and to consider available opportunities for the promotion of demand response and demand flexibility practices. Xcel Energy has engaged in demand response efforts since the early 1990s. Traditionally, demand response referred to reducing peak demand where the programs enabled shedding or curtailment of customer load during system peak conditions or for contingency events. Xcel has recently begun to pilot other types of demand response activities, specifically those allowing load flexibility. Load flexibility opportunities help individual customers manage their...
Hold on.
You cut out, Alex.
Benefits for other customers. Okay.
That's all right. You're back. You're good.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. I'll back up one sentence and hopefully that hits the majority. Xcel has recently begun to pilot other types of demand response activities, specifically those allowing load flexibility. Load flexibility opportunities help individual customers manage their electric bills, support public policy goals related to reduce carbon emissions, and provide benefits for other customers on our system. Providing incentives for reducing peak demand and shifting usage to off-peak periods is a cost-effective way to make use of our current system resources. Xcel Energy currently offers several demand response programs in North Dakota and our other service territories. The programs are summarized on Table 1 of our June 15th comments. The IIJA amendments require that each state regulatory authority consider establishing rate mechanisms to allow an electric public utility to timely recover the costs of promoting demand response to demand flexibility practices. Xcel is allowed to recover the costs of demand response and demand flexibility programs either through rate rises, base rates, or a combination of the two in the states where programs have been approved. This commission has approved three of our demand response or demand flexibility programs and their related costs in North Dakota through previously filed rate cases. For commercial and industrial customers in North Dakota, we have the peak controlled service and the Tier 1 energy controlled programs. In return for reducing their loads, the participating customers receive a monthly discount on their demand charges. Some participants save as much as 50% on demand charges over the year. For small business and residential customers in North Dakota, we have the Saver Switch program, which includes air conditioning and water heater cycling. With respect to establishing rate mechanisms to allow a public utility to recover the costs of promoting these programs, some states allow for performance incentive mechanisms. The most common incentive mechanisms allow the company to earn a percentage of the societal net benefits, which can include benefits that accrue to all customers for avoiding the need to serve the load. Other incentive mechanisms allow for a return on program spending. We view demand response and demand flexibility as resources that are growing in importance in the effort to ensure grid stability and provide for customer engagement and cost savings. We continue to explore and develop innovative ways to work with customers on these types of programs, and would be interested in bringing more of these options to our North Dakota customers. We appreciate the opportunity to provide written and oral comments, and we'd gladly take any questions from the commissioner staff at this time.
Thank you, Alex. Would you like us to ask you questions about some of these specific programs, or should we wait and hear from Ryan and then dig in with him?
I think that if you had any specific questions about programs, you could feel free to jump in right now.
Okay. So on your table one, first page of table one, there's two programs, the AC Rewards and the Peak Partner Rewards, that North Dakota is not part of. Do you know why? If they've never been presented here, or if we said no for some reason? Curious about our lack of involvement in those.
Sure. Commissioner, I can take that question. Ryan Brewers, Manager of Demand Response with Xcel Energy. You know, certainly those are, I will say, newer programs that we have offerings. We have launched them in other states such as South Dakota, Minnesota, and Colorado has just recently launched in New Mexico as well. certainly it is an opportunity to provide another option for customers. You know, currently we do have our Saver Switch program in North Dakota, which, as Alex mentioned earlier, you know, we've been selling since about 1990. Currently, we have about a 40% market share on homes that would qualify with central air conditioning. Currently, so we have, you know, roughly 13,000 customers on that Saver Switch program today. So, you know, we've had some success there, and it, you know, something like AC Awards could be something that we could add to that portfolio. We would likely see some cannibalization with Saver Switch as well. So, as an example, if we added two thermostats, we'd likely take out one Saver Switch because we wouldn't allow customers to double dip, if you will, on both programs.
So what's the difference between them?
With Saver Switch, it is a smart cycling program. So let's just say for ease of scenarios, we would have a four-hour event in the summertime, right? Hot summer day, we're going to control for 4 hours. With a Saver Switch, we would cycle on and off the air conditioner in 15-minute intervals. So we would allow the air conditioner to run for 15 minutes, and then we'd turn the compressor off for 15 minutes. The fan inside the house is still running, air still circulating. So, you know, you're still feeling the air movement, but the compressor's just not running, and we do that every 15 minutes. With AC Rewards, as was mentioned earlier, we would do, more than likely, we would do what we call a setback temperature. So the example before was 74 degrees. We would set back the temperature in the home to maybe 72 a couple hours before the event. So we'd pre-cool the space. And then during that four-hour event, we would then, you know, set that thermostat to 76 or 78 degrees and then let that home kind of ride through that event. And once they hit the 76 or 78 degree temperature, the thermostat would release and then they would go back to their normal conditioning parameters. And then covering the Peak Partner Rewards, that is, again, a new program for us. literally have just we've launched at Minnesota and Colorado, and then are looking to some of them have just come out of pilot, so we are looking at ways that we could expand that to other areas as well.
Is there a technology or infrastructure needed for these that North Dakota doesn't have?
For Peak Partner Rewards, we would have to install an interval meter for customers that don't currently have one, and then an RTU, a remote telemetry unit that basically takes the signal that says, "Hey, we've got a demand event happening." But from a grid perspective, we could add it. Assuming we had the interest from customers, the participation level for like Peak Partner Rewards is 25 kW of controllable load. Currently we have ERS, and in North Dakota that minimum threshold is 50 kW. So while we probably see an uptick in customers participation, there's not a large difference in what they could currently qualify for.
Okay. And what's the participation rate for the ERS in North Dakota?
I don't have it just for commercial industrial customers, but for all customers participating, we're running at about 14 to 14.5% of all customers are participating in some sort of form of VR, whether that's commercial, industrial, or residential.
Okay, so that must be a relatively small rate then, because you said you had a 40% market share of the available homes on the saver switch.
Sure, and let me just quantify that a little bit. So, for a home to qualify for saver switch, it would have to have central air conditioning. So we wouldn't control homes that have no air conditioning or ones that have maybe just like a wall mount air conditioner. Likewise, like apartment buildings wouldn't qualify for those, things of that nature. So when I say it's a 40% market share, it's of eligible homes. So these would be typically standalone homes.
Is that statistic for North Dakota share, right?
That is just for North Dakota. That is correct.
So can you get the the participation for ERS after they hear and send that to us, or is that not a number you can find?
I would think we'd be able to get a number for you.
Okay. And then how is ERS and Peak Rewards, and actually, how are the rewards different, like between Saver Switch and AC and ERS and Peak? And why do you have so many different? Wouldn't it be easier to just kind of consolidate these into maybe here's what's available for AC and here's what's available for the industrial, demand response to promote reductions for the commercial industrial folks?
Sure. And, I think we view it a lot of ways of giving customers options on how they participate. And so, as an example, with Saver Switch and AC Rewards, Saver Switch is a device at no cost to the customer, right? They order it from us, we go out and install it. We have a firm go out and install them on the outside the house on the condenser, and it's done with. It doesn't cost the customer anything. For AC Rewards, the customer does have to have a smart thermostat, and that they can buy it, through a storefront option through us. They might already have it through various, vendors that we support. And then, they do have to have home Wi-Fi. They have to have an internet connection at home, and they can sign up for that. Now, the incentives are similar, not always the same, but they are similar for customers. So there are a couple nuanced differences, like with the AC Rewards, the functionality is that, we're changing that set point. With Saver Switch, it's we're cycling the air conditioner. So your set point still stays the same, and it's, the air conditioner is just trying to run less. Sure. So just a couple different, customer experiences that may be different.
Got it.
And then for ERS and Peak Partner Rewards, ERS customers get a credit all year long. And then when an event happens, they have to participate. And if they don't, they get a penalty. And so, that's been a program that we've had for, 30 years. With Peak Partner Rewards, it's a little bit different. They do submit a level of control below that they would want to get to. So let's just, as an example, say it's 500 kW. They would get a reservation credit on their bill, you know, every month they're at, you know, they for that 500 kW. And then when we have an event, they actually get a performance incentive. So it's less of a punitive option, where if they don't perform, they just don't get their performance incentive. So, you know, if you look at a risk reward, ERS is our, you know, highest risk, highest reward for a customer. You know, Peak Partner Rewards is maybe a little less risk for them, a little less reward.
Sure. Randy, you've got questions?
I have to clarify something with Alex. Maybe I just wrote this down wrong. Did you say some residential customers saving as much as 50% per year?
That would be the ERS customers.
Yeah.
And just to clarify that, you know, if you look at a standard CNI customer's bill, I'm going to really simplify it and say they kind of pay for three things, right? They pay for fuel, they pay for the energy they use, and they pay for their demand. Okay. So that demand portion of their bill, they could save 50% of that demand portion.
So what I wrote down wrong, that's not residential customers, that's commercial and industrial on the ERS.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that.
And it's just their demand charge, not their whole bill.
Correct.
Okay. All right. You have some more, Randy?
I do not.
Sure.
You just want questions on the...
Anything.
Oh, you talked a little bit about the pilot programs, and I see that most of them are in Minnesota. Is there any rollout that you're looking at doing to North Dakota? And if so, what time frame?
You know, sure. You know, we're always evaluating participation and kind of install base, right, of where we can test these out. Because with pilots, you know, we don't always expect to be successful with them. So, right, we mm-hmm. want to make sure we're getting a statistically valid sample of customers and seeing how things are working. And you know, we've had pilots that we've tried and just like, nope, this doesn't work. Or that's like, yeah, we see some potential here and we think it's a great opportunity. And then we, you know, try to roll those out as programs. And as we get successes, then we, you know, continue to expand that into our, you know, jurisdictions where we think it's going to make the most sense. So, you know, as an example, we're starting to pilot a lot of EV programs for charging, right? We've got something called Charging Perks that we're doing. It's, you know, we send price signals to the manufacturers of EVs that then go into the cars so that people know when it's best to charge on our system. That very well could be something that gets rolled out here in the next couple of years in jurisdictions. And we test, you know, different, you know, like I said, different pilots in different locations. So something we're always evaluating.
So the first three have been launched, correct? And the other ones, and the other ones have not been launched?
First three on are you talking table one?
No, page the pilot two. Program. Page six. The EV optimization, it says 2022 anticipated launch. That's launched.
Yep.
And the next one is launched.
It is I would say it's launched. It'll launch in November yet. I don't know exactly if we've launched it this week or not.
Okay. Okay. So you're in the very early stages of these pilot programs.
You are correct.
Or if not. I just have another question. With the other two, we've talked about customer. I'm going to talk about residential and industrial demand response fatigue. are you seeing that with your customers, or are you seeing them being more energetic and willing to participate, or where are you at with that? Are you still seeing people?
Sure.
Go ahead.
You know, and I think some of the, you know, fatigue comes from, and I'm just speaking generally, you know, from a CNI perspective, you know, when we don't have enough options for them to participate. right? It sometimes can be a square peg, round hole. So that's one of the reasons why you're seeing us try to come out with more options for customers, letting them kind of choose and participate, pick how they participate. Now, they might not get as a high of incentive, but there's less risk there for them. So, you know, if they have to, you know, buy through an event, as an example, that gives them more options to do that. So while I think it's the options, right, if customers have more options, they're going to probably have a better opportunity to participate with us. So I do think it's important to give customers as many options as we can, and you know, try to tailor things to that fit that may be better.
Oops, we lost.
But I could see. Oh, I'm sorry.
We lost a little bit of that after you said better fit.
Okay, you know, I will say I believe right now we are a summer peaking utility in North Dakota. I could envision a time with, you know, beneficial electrification and you know, as the grid changes, you know, we could become a winter peaking utility. And so certainly the evolution of our programs are going to have to, you know, change where we can start, you know, looking for options to control, but maybe not impact people's, you know, lives as you know, a winter event might happen. So looking at things like our water heater control program, right, we'll need to expand that where we can maybe, you know, again, heat up water in a water heater and store it as like a thermal battery. And maybe then cycle the water heater like we do with an AC unit, but maybe that can happen in the winter time. And again, you know, not customers aren't seeing that impact on them.
Okay, thank you, Ryan.
Ryan, do you feel that you've what level of maximization do you think your in commercial industrial potential clients are, or that category of clients are using the DR?
Let me just kind of restate the question because I think you broke up on my end a little bit. Like, what's my max potential for commercial industrial customers?
Yeah, that'd be a better way to say it. Yep.
No worries. Tough to say, right? Because, you know, as, you know, if fleets, as an example, in North Dakota get electrified, I think there's going to be a huge opportunity for them there. I do think that more options for customers is a way that we can you know, bring in more customers, right? So whether it's, you know, the ERS, whether it's a peak partner rewards, whether it's EV charging, you know, maybe it's a you know, a pricing signal that, you know, when we have a control event, we send them a signal saying, hey, the prices are going to be more expensive during this time. You can either curtail or you can buy through. And it just gives them more options of how they participate with us. And, you know, we are, you know, looking at really at all options we can for customers.
Sure. I guess just looking at what you have today with existing technology and kind of your traditional commercial industrial customers, are they, like, is there growth there in just getting them on sort of your basic demand response program?
Yeah, I mean, and we've got, you know, account management staff that meets with our customers, you know, monthly, you know, daily in some cases, and is always promoting options for them, you know, for demand response. You know, these are one of the few tools we have as a utility that can allow customers to pay less of their electric bill, right? Because these can be rate savings options for them. So certainly customers are trying to, you know, find any way that they can. And so I do think there's interest to hear it. It's, you know, can we find the right program for them to participate in?
Okay. So I would be interested in kind of your, I think I asked both Autotel and MDU to look at their customers that qualify for each of these programs and what percent of them are in that. I think you talked about getting that back to us for ERS, but I guess this is another request for that. These pilot programs, were those directed by you guys, or did the commission in Minnesota request you get engaged in these? Were any of these legislative mandates? I'm curious, kind of the driver of all of these pilots.
I'm going to ask Sean to pop on here. I, you know, some of them are going to be our, you know, kind of ideas to bring to the commission. I don't know from a historical standpoint, you know, how many were legislatively directed or commission directed. So, Sean, if you don't mind speaking to that.
Oh, there he is. Hi, Sean.
Oh, Sean, you have to check your microphone.
It's all right. No worries.
Nothing else, maybe try hopping off and back on.
So, yeah, like I'm fairly new in my role, so I don't know the historical context to that question. So
sure.
I apologize for that.
Can we do a little survey to see if there's any online commenters or anyone else in the room? I'm just wondering where we're at with time.
Yep. While we wait for him, Matt, do you want to see if there's others online? Who are there? Anybody else out there that you see?
There's currently no one in the public phone bridge.
Okay. Is there anyone else in the room who wants to speak? No? Oh. Adam has an answer.
Yeah, the answer is, this is Adam Reffin with staff. One of the answers, at least, is the Minnesota Commission ordered them to add 400 megawatts of incremental demand response by 2023. If you look at our IRP models, they remove them because they're not cost effective, if memory serves me correctly.
Got it. That's helpful. Maybe Sean can provide more color on that. But thanks, Adam. It's good. We see you, Sean.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Oh, and we hear you. Yay.
Wonderful. I guess that worked. I appreciate the patience. In response to the reasons we're pursuing additional demand response pilots and programs in other states, there are a variety of reasons. We do have goals and orders in Minnesota, Colorado, and some of our other states that drive us toward innovation in the demand response area. The programs themselves are not prescribed in those states, but the targets certainly are. There's also, you know, we look toward our resource needs in the future, and demand response can be one of the solutions for future resource needs. And we see demand response as an opportunity to work with customers in a positive way. You know, we see more price flexibility, more resource flexibility needed in the future. And this these types of programs are ways in which we can create flexibility on the demand side to meet those resource needs. So it is a variety of reasons.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. We'll look forward to what you learn from some of those pilots, seeing how they may or may not be plausible here. All right, do you have any more questions, Randy?
I do not.
Sherry? Okay. I don't think I have any more questions for Excel either. Steph?
No, staff just appreciates the participation in the comments that were filed.
Good. All right. Thank you, Excel. And everybody filed really great comments and helped to provide a strong basis for the discussion today. So really appreciate that. Jack, do we have formal findings we have to make at any point as a result of these dockets? Yeah,
there will be a determination that will be provided by the commission as a result of these public hearings.
What are the forms of that determination? Like, is it just on the one question of whether we should consider establishing these mechanisms to allow them to recover the promotion, which we already do?
Yes, in short, I mean, it's a little bit broader than that, actually, this and the EV docket and what we're allowed to do. And so it is a little more expansive. So really both of these public hearings were an opportunity to really take a look at what we currently have and look at what we'd like to promote, if anything, at all. So our ultimate conclusion could be to do nothing, or we could say we would like to move in a certain direction, either through rule, order, or even possible legislation.
Okay. All right, very good. So one last check on the phones or the bridge or whatever we're using. Anything?
Nope.
Okay, Randy or Sherry, do you have any closing comments you want to make?
I have none.
No, but just thank you so much for participating and being here today and along with your written comments. Much appreciated.
I would echo that and say I also, so thank you to the companies, those in the room and virtually. I think the virtual worked fine for this, so I'm, you know, don't feel bad about any technology snafus or whatever. We can live with that, and it definitely allows for broader participation of a number of people in the companies, so in an efficient way. Do you have a comment? Okay, I'll finish and then back to Randy. But I will say I want to give a little shout out to our staff and specifically Jack on initiating these, both this and the EV docket. Not every state is doing it this way, and I got a fair number of comments at NARUC from others who are looking at what we've done and wondering why or how, or, you know, it seemed to be pretty productive. A lot of the interest groups really appreciate having the venue where they can share their expertise, their thoughts and ideas, what's happening in other states. So this has been really helpful. So thank you both, you and Victor, for bringing this forward as an idea. And helping us have these venues to have the discussion outside of rate cases, outside of IRPs, to learn more, hear more, compare, ask a lot of good questions. So I think it's really been great, and it's probably a model we should use for other topics in the future. So quickly, Randy, and then I'll turn to you. The final date for submitting comments is... Do we have a date after this set?
No, we didn't really set a date for providing comments after the hearing, but of course we'll still receive them and take into consideration as we deem necessary.
Okay, very good. So no final deadline, but as far as the things that we asked for today, you know, if you can get those within the next couple of weeks or so, that should be fine. Randy?
So you spurred another thought when you were talking about that, when you correctly talked about this venue and being pretty simple, and actually kind of had a similar run through with the EV charging, and so that just made me think of in this particular case now, not only is this pretty simple for people to use, but this particular case got pretty good publicity. I think it was even on the front page of the Bismarck Tribune. I do the Fargo Forum virtually or electronically, and I know it was, I don't know if on the paper editions, if it was a front page article, but it was featured pretty prominently on their electronic. And the day has come and gone, and no advocacy groups that often involve themselves in our rate cases, no commercial or industrial customers that one might think would be waiting, oh, if I was just offered this, I'd be able to curtail lots of energy or something, and it's crickets. So I'm not sure if there's any knowledge to be gained by silence in certain situations, but... Just the observation I had when you correctly pointed out how easy this was to use this venue. Someone had something more to say.
Yeah. Thank you for mentioning that. Also, a shout out to Stacey Ebro, who our public information officer, who did a really good job of promoting both of these events and trying to make people aware of it. I would say as a last thing, to the utilities, if there are big subject areas that you think could benefit from this type of an exchange and discussion, don't hesitate to share those ideas as we move forward on this transition time period where there's so many new things being considered and discussed. This is a great way to get ideas and thoughts into our heads from a lot of different sources. So I'm really open to having these on other subjects. Let us know. Okay, with that, I think that's the end of it. Thank you so much. Have a great day and a great Thanksgiving a week from now.